Welcome again to RTE's Your Politics podcast, the weekly take on all things political from our team in Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler, and with me, my colleagues Paul Cunningham, Juliette Gash, and Micheál Lehane. And we were just saying a while ago, a week since we last sat here. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've had the Oval Office bust up between Trump and Zelensky. We've had the cutting of US aid and intelligence sharing to Ukraine. We've had Germany doing a huge volte-face on debt and remilitarization.
Although we did mark that. We did indicate something big was coming in Germany. So that's one thing we predicted.
France offering a European nuclear umbrella, which suddenly loads of people are interested in and in favour of. Today we have another EU summit on defence and Ukraine. You have Donald Tusk, now Polish Prime Minister, saying Europe is now in a new arms race. And you've Kaja Kallas talking about a coalition of the willing. It's a lot.
Yeah. Kaja Kallas, if I remember correctly, is the Estonian commissioner, and Donald Tusk is the Polish leader. And guess what? They sort of are up there bordering both Russia and Ukraine. So for countries in the East who are looking at developments that are happening at a very rapid pace, they see a Ukraine militarily losing support from the United States. And indeed, we're hearing, although it's not completely confirmed, that Trump's people are calling up opposition party leaders in Ukraine to try and see if they can have an election, it seems, with a view to ousting Volodymyr Zelensky from office. So there's so much happening. But if you're particularly one of those countries on the east, they have been looking at this in the context of Russia being up on their border. And that's why the language you're getting there is just so stark, that we are entering an arms race. I know from Ireland that at a remove, it seems strange, and people will always be saying, why can't we build houses rather than purchasing bombs? But that is part of the dynamic of the European Union right now, absolutely.
Bombs, not butter, of course, the famous slogan, but the EU firmly at the moment putting its face into spending an awful lot more on defence. We had Ursula von der Leyen talking about the new borrowing scheme, this talk of Eurobonds. I don't know whether all that will materialise, but things are moving and moving fast, which leaves Ireland negotiating very choppy waters.
Yes, and so next week we've got the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. He's travelling to Washington. He's going to be going into that Oval Office where Volodymyr Zelensky was. And the question is, what's going to happen? My sense of it is that this won't be part two, that there will be, like with France, like with the UK, that there'll be a reasonably good relationship. Whether tougher words are said in private, we don't know, but I wouldn't expect a spectacular disaster. But the difficulty is that things are happening so quickly. Who knows what the situation will be by the time Micheál Martin is walking in there? It could be that Donald Trump announces all those tariffs and we're in the middle of a trade war, which would have immediate effect. Who knows what's going to be happening with regard to Ukraine? And as we said, Europe is building up towards it as well. And then somewhere in the periphery, we've also got Gaza, an astonishing statement from the president talking about the possibility. You can read it a couple of ways, but one was that if the hostages that quite rightly should be released immediately and shouldn't have spent the past 18 months underground by held by armed men, then everyone's going to die. I mean, just it's, what was that phrase? Flooding the zone. There's so much going on, it's nearly impossible to be able to get your head around it.
And on the Irish side, Micheál, do you think there's an awareness of the stakes here? Do you think they've been practicing those kind of guerrilla handshakes that Trump is very fond of with foreign leaders? And, you know, how to handle that jostling and jousting as well as the diplomatic message we'll be sending?
Yeah, and I suppose there are a few positives. I mean, they're not great, but there is the fact that it's Patrick's Day. Everyone says there is a feel-good factor there. Micheál Martin emphasising the fact that this has been a celebration between the two countries, like even before the foundation of the state. So there is that. There are those golf links as well, which I think they're going to be keen to emphasise, whether it's Dunbeg or it's an invitation to the Ryder Cup. But Trump himself, from what I sense, is seen perhaps even as the more straightforward bit of this. It could be what J.D. Vance says, and it's certainly what the press pack are going to be primed to go on. That could be the more difficult parts for Micheál Martin. And there is a sense coming from Washington, which the Irish diplomats are picking up, that it will be on the issues of Gaza and Israel and trade rather than Ukraine, that Micheál Martin is going to be picked off on, or certainly the attempts are going to be there for that. So he's going to have to call on all that experience. He does look to have the gears for this, but of course he does have a dual role here as well. It is Ireland and its open economy and protecting the jobs here, which he says is his primary role, as well as being on the day the EU's man in Washington.
And also the question, Juliette, and I presume we'll find this out this week, how much attention America has been paying to, you know, we've been hearing, you know, US senators calling for Ireland to spend more on defence. We know that Donald Trump has spoken about pharmaceuticals in particular in terms of trade. We've had Alan Shatter and others warning, you know, Ireland, and there have been, again, concerns, haven't there, within from some of the government's own economic advisors that our political aims in terms of peace in Gaza and Ukraine and our economic aims in terms of economic ties to the US, that there's a lot of tension there. And that's the tripwire Micheál Martin's going to have to walk.
And no better man. I mean, a very experienced man, and he'll be showing his best diplomatic face. There are obviously things that we can show that there has been movement in terms of we're going to invest in fight, you know, defending our skies, that we're, that as part of Europe, we're going to be part of this rearm Europe 800 billion plan. Will that be enough? On pharmaceuticals, you know, the experts will say you can't just move a pharmaceutical plant like that. You know, it'll take time, and the presidency does only last 4 years, but will that agenda continue? So there's so many things that we have to be careful on. I want to say be defensive on without showing that we're being defensive on. So it's a real balancing act that he has to play, all while trying to keep this sort of fun. Oh, St. Patrick's Day. It's always been this moment of, you know, this is our special day, and we're bigging up the long links. But those links which Trump has with Ireland are quite tenuous, you know, the Gulf links, but he's got a heritage in Scotland and Germany, not in Ireland, which we would have liked.
It has changed so considerably, though, wasn't it? A few weeks back, it was, will Micheál Martin raise the points? Will he raise them forcefully? Now it's really in sporting terms. If he can get out of there with a scoreless draw, it'll be a great result. I mean, that's as simple as that.
And you also get signals, while we always focus on what President Trump is talking about in the context of the rest of the world. If you're looking at a State of the Union address this week, it was all domestic, all 90 minutes of it, or 92 minutes.
99.
He was talking home, talking to the people, although I heard Sean Whelan, our colleague in Washington, said you'd really have to be a political nerd to have got your way through the all 99 minutes of it.
But he's transactional. So Keir Starmer was able to offer him, you know, the visit to the King and so on, although Zelensky pointedly getting in there first at the weekend. What do we offer? Do we say Ryanair will buy more of your planes? Do we say we're going to build a big new LNG terminal that all the climate activists don't want? It's there as an energy backup, and we're going to buy your fracked gas. That's what we're going to do for you, Mr.
It
President.
Is interesting, because the key report and key piece of analysis that was going to either justify or not justify this huge contentious purchase, or something that was contentious last year anyway, that still hasn't come back. So when Micheál Martin was walking into Cabinet on Tuesday and talking about this decision, he said the conversations we've had with officials say that we need it. So there definitely was a degree of haste here for whatever reason.
And the other thing,
what reason do you think it might have been, Micheál?
I think it's this, and I think you can also talk about in a time of uncertainty, that uncertainty that Pascal Donoghue says he can see in his constituents' eyes. He's picking it up at that level. I think that probably, if the government is going to make a leap on such a move like this, is the time to do it.
Yeah. And making you don't a leap have the pesky on the Greens with you either.
And making a leap on the triple lock.
Yeah, I mean, this was something which had been signalled, and Fine Gael has been talking about this. So maybe the change is that it's Fianna Fáil getting on board with it. So, and what we know is that triple lock means that if you're going to send, as it currently stands, more than a dozen troops abroad, then you have got support from Cabinet, you've got support from Dáil Éireann, and you also got a mandate from the UN Security Council. So under the proposals, and we've yet to see this draft legislation just yet, but under the proposals, that requirement for a UN mandate is to be removed. The government says it's about time we stand on our own 2 feet, that the Irish government, a sovereign parliament, should decide where our troops go, that we shouldn't have to rely on Russia, China, or America, or anyone else. And yet you've got a solid block of people who are very concerned that this is a slippery slope, and that if you just have a simple majority, any government could be sending our troops anywhere, and that isn't good enough. So this is a row that's going to be pretty big.
And of course, we won't see that legislation for a while if it has to go before a committee for pre-legislative scrutiny, which seems to be the next step. And there's still no sign of committees.
That's what he said. The next step will be presented to Cabinet or to committee. Yeah.
So that could be a while off. The business committee met this morning, fairly contentious meeting there again, and heated, because the Dáil isn't back till the 19th once it goes into recess this evening. And when it comes back, there's no legislation on the agenda again. It's all statements. So this new Dáil is really going at a very slow pace indeed, and that row over speaking time still delays the establishment of committees, although the opposition say there is a way around that. But there aren't many sitting days.
It's 11, isn't it?
Yeah, 11, before Easter.
And then there's 2 weeks off for Easter.
Yeah.
That's a hard sell to people who voted people in. You know, they want progress, they want movement. We keep on hearing at leaders' questions really important issues that need to be resolved, like school places, assessments for children with additional needs. Mm. And the government says it's working on it, it's doing everything it can. Yet when you see how little business is being done in the Dáil, it kind of sticks in the craw.
Do we know how many pieces of legislation have been passed by the 34th Dáil?
Janie.
There was a piece last night. There was a report in final stages of a finance piece last night. But there's very, very few. There's very few pieces of legislation on the order paper now.
Or going before cabinet, which was the other thing, an indication, as we said, the last 2 weeks that there wasn't anything there. So
what we're getting at the moment is we're getting a lot of political interviews. We're getting a lot of political statements. We're getting a lot of ministers talking about the memos they're bringing to cabinet on various things. And we'll come back to the speaking rights row in and of itself in a moment. But because
only
of all because of all of that, we don't have laws being... I mean, and sometimes it's not widely understood the role that the committees play in the passing of any piece of legislation. You don't just, you know, draw up a bill and go into the Dáil and vote on it.
It has two roles now, doesn't it? It has the very first role with the pre-legislative scrutiny, which is kind of a relatively new role, where it's there before it makes its way into the Dáil at all, as well as the key committee stage, which is where all the fine detail is debated over several hours or several months, as in the case of the big piece of planning legislation last year. So without that, you can't really pass any legislation. I think what's probably helping the government and all the TDs here is that looming shadow that everything could change anyway economically when you have the tariffs and you have the uncertainty that's in the air. As a result of that, there is a feeling, what's the point in getting seriously started given that everything could change and will change so drastically soon anyway?
And I think it is clear, and once again, you might want to come back to it, but opposition politicians, you can see it in their eyes as they're looking at
like
possible tariffs.
See things in their eyes.
barreling across the Atlantic that... while there is a couple of rows to go on the speaking rights row, like mini rows, but that this is going to get sorted because they need to get down to business. Yeah.
The quorum bit is interesting, isn't it? What's been happening there?
Well, Micheál's been doing this one a little bit closer than me.
Well, the opposition have upped the ante really in relation to this. So they've been calling a quorum where there aren't enough TDs in the chamber. Which
so
is
the
just,
quorum is the minimum number you have to have.
Yeah.
And it's five.
Five, yeah. So there was on Tuesday, Wednesday, Jim O'Callaghan was speaking and Sinn Féin called a quorum, Darren O'Rourke. And it still took a while to get it. And the Taoiseach, who had been in the chamber for several hours at that point, even had to come back in with all his files and sit down for a short while to make up the quorum. They also withdrew the pairs. No impact on that last night when it came to the votes. The government had 13, 14 to spare in each of the votes. And I suppose that was the Taoiseach away last night at the UK-Ireland summit. But I suppose there could come a night where that could pose difficulties.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, when we've been hearing so much, you know, spoken about so movingly by government TDs about, you know, the value of their democratic mandate and how hard it is for them to get time in the Dáil chamber and, you know, how much they have been disadvantaged about all of this. And I know every time somebody says, well, if you don't see people in the chamber, you know, they are working away in their offices or they're working away on other things. But the fact that they're finding it hard to get even five TDs from the government side to sit in the chamber during a debate, it is an interesting counterpoint to all of that, isn't it?
I suppose it is. I suppose in relation to statements and that, it's allotted time though, so maybe being there wouldn't be enough. But if you do look generally over the last few weeks and you look to government backbenchers speaking, from what I can see, there is a lot of time though. I've always thought that the speaking row though wasn't about that. It was about Michael Lowry and Danny Healy-Ray in particular wanting the regular slot in the prime position. That's what plays well in the local media, and it has to be regular. It has to be seen to be asking the Taoiseach or the Taoiseach to directly. There are other ways of doing it, but they're to the side and they're more sporadic.
And while that, again, you know, those questions and those moments don't, again, not always covered in the mainstream media to a huge amount. They don't always necessarily travel with the public, but very important to your constituency.
Yeah, massively so. And social media makes that even a bigger issue now as well. So for all those reasons. And I don't think any kind of rural TD who's the opportunity to do that. In the past, they might have just played the low-key game and kept active on the ground. No one's willing to play that anymore.
So Elon Musk and the influence he's having on Irish politics, he's been copying, has he, some of our politicians' ideas? Explain, please.
Well, Michael Collins is clearly of the view that Elon Musk was influenced by their motion from last year, which talked about government waste and the need to cut it and to set up an agency, aside from the Controller and Auditor General, that would take a clear look at all of this and just get down and get cracking on that waste. And they're clear, Elon Musk copped onto it. Look what's happening now. Mm.
And the whole point that Michael Collins is making, isn't it, is that it should be, because this would be the similarity with Elon Musk's Doge. He wants an outside body to come in and look at the system from the outside, because if you're inside the system, then, well, presumably that's what Deeper and all the rest are supposed to be doing already.
The CNAG does it, though. The CNAG does catch these things. I mean, it emerges afterwards. But the idea of another office will be difficult, you would think, if that is the role of the CNAG anyway. I thought it was interesting, too, that in his defence of spending, the new OPW minister, Kevin Boxer-Morne, doesn't like the term bike shed anymore. He's going with the RTE version, actually, which is bike shelter.
And he said it in impassioned terms with his arms raised to the heavens. Yeah. And that was on Wednesday. If anyone wants to go back, check the record.
But the issue of waste is one that has huge traction with the public. And,
yes.
You know, it's an easy one for politicians, isn't it? Because, you know, it's not as if we're short of examples of waste. And while we are great, and even, and there is great work being done by the Office of the Controller and Auditor General, but the issue seems to be, how do you stop the problems as they're emerging? Why can we only ever investigate kind of post hoc, and then you're into the
Jack
lack
Chambers
of accountability? Jack
Chambers is reviewing spending codes.
Yes. I suppose the idea is that when it comes to, if you take the most recent one, the National Gallery printer, this was sort of acquired with good reason, but the ultimate driver, it seems, we wait for the final report, seems to have been sort speculative, opportunistic, that there was a bag of money there and they said, Jesus, we got the project for that, let's go get it and then we'll work out the other stuff afterwards. And so it's those controls in relation to decision making is where the focus has to be. And to a certain extent, the politicians are quite happy to come out and castigate agencies of the state, but in many cases they control those rules. And so if there's going to be responsibility, it shouldn't just necessarily be on the National Gallery, it also has to be on the government, which proposed those rules and allowed such speculative purchasing happen.
But one of the things that frequently, you know, makes these things go wrong in the first place is that you've got so many silos, you've got so many different regulations and things in different areas, and you know, you can have something that starts under one budget and then lapses because
That's why the idea of a department of government efficiency, which isn't even a department, is so attractive, because you can say, oh, I know how to fix this. But there are all these processes and procedures, and as you say, they are siloed and they're not talking to one another.
Or like the moment Musk, and they all thought they'd found people who were claiming social protection over there, going, you know, who were claiming to be 100 and something, and it was to do with a zero on a computer system.
Exactly. Or like all of a sudden they get rid of, you know, Ebola care because they're like, oh, we can save that money there. Oh, no, hang on. Roll back. We don't want to get rid of the Ebola vaccine because that's obviously going to be a problem. You know, and it's short-sighted where you think you can go in, stroke of a pen, fix this. And it actually does take time to unpick and or to merge or however you want to become more efficient.
There was, we had an unusual situation this week when we had two of the most important quangos in the country, or heavyweight quangos in the country, at the Fiscal Advisory Council and the Climate Change Council, and coming out with pretty much a joint report on the cost of climate change in action to Ireland. Huge sums.
Yes, we're back into the millions and billions again. And what was interesting was that the two came together and arrived at the same point. And they are just basically warning that if we don't hit our 2030 targets to reduce emissions by 51%, then we're on the hook for 2021, 22.
Highly speculative, billion. The Taoiseach said. Highly speculative figure.
You stole my line.
Highly speculative.
However, the Taoiseach, when he was speaking in Lena's questions, he said that he wouldn't get too worried about it necessarily. Highly speculative. There was quite a range in what could happen. And then he dismissed opposition suggestions that this government has basically jettisoned the green agenda.
Yeah, he's touchy on that.
He is. And then he said that, yes, they would be working, you know, no stone left unturned, working harder than ever. Problem is that the data just doesn't bear that out. And I think that it's going to become a big issue for them unless they are able to deliver in ways that we don't know how they're going to deliver just yet. Today, it's worth saying, lowest sea ice levels in the Arctic than ever before. The trend is pretty clear. We have seen storms here, storm surges, the ferocity of them, the wind, everything. Like, we can't say we don't know.
Yeah, and the impact of that storm is actually, Mark and Kenny speaking earlier, that there are people in North Leitrim in particular, who said, who still don't have their phone coverage back, which is causing difficulty, particularly for elderly people who are in getting home help and the like.
Yeah, and the quality of broadband isn't as good in some parts of rural Ireland since the storm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, apparently it's all back and it's all fixed. Agriculture is still one of the standout areas where the gap between the target and the delivery is wider than either council would like. But it's hard to see this government annoying all those farmers.
Yeah, well, let's watch out. One of the things we thought was interesting this week was that a declaration that the Minister for Agriculture told Cabinet that when it came to the derogation on nitrates, that we would be applying to have it rolled over at the end of this year from the European Commission. But it was noted that we are the only country who still has a derogation in relation to this particular one. The government saying it's going to go in and fight. But you always have the suspicion that they know a little bit more than they're saying, which is that it's unlikely to be rolled over. Or if it is rolled over, the percentages are going to go down, that this is like a crisis coming. So the question is, you know, there's a couple of times where the government is saying it's going to do stuff, climate action, nitrates, where you just feel that if you're going to watch this in a few months' time, some of the words that we used in the Dáil this week will be rolled out again and said, well, this is what you said, but this is actually where we stand.
And the Mercosur deal is going to be another interesting test soon, because if this trade war with the States does go ahead, the only option for the EU, and we've heard them already, Ursula von der Leyen already talking about this, the need to press ahead with trade deals with South America, with Canada.
And there's a huge drive in like the centre of Europe and countries like Japan, France and Spain for that to happen. Ireland, we hear, is opposed to it and people are fighting. And there's the issue in relation to beef, how that beef is processed, the standards which are applied, the question of hormones involved. But to a certain extent, I think the boat has sailed on that one. There's going to be an economic imperative and our concerns are just going to be put to one side.
And that's one of Donald Trump's big bugbears as well, isn't it? The fact that US food can't be imported into the EU because of the range of food standards.
Yeah,
and
he keeps on saying that they don't import our food, but we do. I mean, there are imports that are coming in from the US, but that's one of his big bugbears. But again, on the environment on the environment issue, you know, as much as we want to do, when you see America rowing back on any commitments it had, it's staggering at how much of a challenge it's going to be when you've got one of the biggest polluters going, "Eh, don't care," you know, and that's the challenge.
They did signal the executive order to pull out of the Paris Agreement, which is that round the world deal. But like last time, it takes a number of years before it comes into effect.
But the straws are coming back, aren't they? The plastic straws.
The plastic straws. No, that's only in federal buildings. But so there is, you know, what you can actually see was that Trump in his first presidency was only able to go so far. The question is, if the Trump presidency continues over a second term, whether he's vice president or not, or some of his supporters effectively take over, it's at that stage, if you've got an eight-year block of this type of politics in with regard to environmental concern, it could be hugely damaging.
Also talk of them pulling out of the World Health Organization, also speculation about US involvement in NATO. So quite a lot of things being upended. But
all is not lost, though. Look at the Shannon is travelling to the US.
Mark Daly.
He was initially down to travel to Edinburgh, but the government looked at that and decided you got to send, as John Giles would say, best players in their best positions. So he's on his way to the US.
He's the Irish asset.
That's good to hear. Let's talk about the presidency before we go. So we have Juliet. The Social Democrats, the Labour Party, the Greens and Sinn Féin, they're talking about a combined candidate.
And Roisin Shorthall,
ruled herself out.
That's it, I
know. Paul Cunningham.
I know, that works.
Are we building any Broadcasting Act by suggesting each other? Because we probably are. Let's leave that one.
Yeah, interesting. I suppose she was seen as sort of a, you know, the right type, the sort of... elder stateswoman, if I may. She did retire from the Dáil after a very long career. But no, she says she's not interested. So the names that have been kicking about are still kicking about. And Peter Casey saying he's well able for it and he's in a healthier position. I mean, look, he's had a tilt. He was second the last time out, but he didn't do so well in the European elections. And whether he'd be seen as being the right man for the job, who knows?
It's interesting. I forget who was... it was in one of the ad breaks on the week in politics we were talking about this. And one of the guests was pointing out it's going to be harder to get nominations through the independent route this time. I don't know, does that stack up or does that ring a bell with anyone?
Is that on the basis of local... Because basically, I think it's four local authorities. Yeah. If they back, you can become a candidate. The local elections we just had in May, so is it the outcome of the local elections?
I think it's about, they don't control...
Exactly.
Enough councils to be able to deliver
and
the votes.
So Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael would have the capacity to block a council from being able to decide.
And for all the talk about a combined opposition candidate, it's really interesting looking at the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael parties. And, you know, these things are tricky. I know there's
Fine Gael is particularly bad at them. Although I think it was Micheál said at the
last... Could they come together and put forward a combined candidate?
I think he said something slanderous that Fine Gael had never had a president. But if you go back to our first president, he was the joint candidate of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, Douglas Hyde. And he agreed to do it. So they could possibly claim that one.
Okay.
So it isn't a duck. You know.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to watch that space because, you know, there may be plenty of candidates looking to put their hat in the ring or not. But it's a different thing from a political party. A lot of money, a lot of effort and, you know, very often humiliation.
A joint candidate would be the kind of final straw for their individual identities, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I know they
wouldn't be worth that, surely.
No.
So what would they say about each other running against each other?
What would they say during elections? It's beneficial to them both to... highlight differences, isn't it?
But anyway, I think like once the candidates are out there, then it just becomes personal to the candidate because this campaign is all about personal and personality and character. And if we learned anything from 2011, because there's no incumbent going to be this time, one of the things that Michael D. Higgins did very well was that he managed to stay out of the firing line.
Yeah.
And just he was the last man standing, as well as obviously having his political career and abilities, but he didn't get caught up in controversy during the campaign and through he came.
And previous presidential campaigns have been particularly testing for Sinn Féin, haven't they? So the question is whether they go it alone again. And that brings, you know, even, you know, we had the exchange, Micheál Martin making the reference to Bic McFarlane and being called a patriot by the party. And, you know, it highlights all of those differences all over again. And that spotlight comes on Sinn Féin. And, you know, the past in Northern Ireland and the legacy of the
Troubles. I mean, there's all sorts of... First of all, because Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin have the number of TDs, they can nominate themselves. And from Sinn Féin, with their MO being United Ireland, you know, was one of the reasons they had Martin McGuinness standing because he was that sort of figure. You know, people, once again, just rumours, people saying Michelle O'Neill would be a good candidate. And once again... be a capacity for Sinn Féin to remind the electorate of what their MO is, you know, their priority, United Ireland, and having a candidate from Northern Ireland in the South talking about that issue. So I think it's more likely that they would want to assert their own identity rather than, you know, hang out with the Greens, Social Democrats and Labour.
Is it impossible that Mary Lou MacDonald will be the candidate?
Nothing's impossible.
She said she's not a quitter, isn't that right?
Becoming president wouldn't be quitting, though, would it?
On that note.
As the rumours fly.
On that ambiguous note. God knows, so this day week is the 12th, yes. Yeah. So this day week is the big day for Micheál Martin and for Ireland in the Oval Office. Who knows what will come. I'm inclined to think, no, it won't be a big kind of Zelensky bust-up. I think he'll toy with him like a mouse. He likes the cameras, Donald Trump. This will make great television, isn't that what he said?
Yeah.
Are we going to have the knee squeezes? Are we going to have those, like you said, the gorilla handshake? Oh, let's wait with bated breath.
And you can do all the body language analysis for it, Juliet. Okay, we'll talk to you again in a week's time. Thank you. Bye.